This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 18. The assigned texts are 18 through 23, but we're going to focus on 21. So we'll chant that together. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So text number 21 of the 18th chapter, I'll read the word for word, then we can chant. Ata therefore, api certainly, yat whose, pada naka, nails of the feet, avashrishtam, emanating, jagat, the whole universe, varincha, brahmaji, upahrita, collected, arhana, worship, amba, water, sa, along with, isham, Lord Shiva, Punati purifies Anyatama. Who else? Mukundat, besides the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, Ka, who? Nama, name, Loke, within the world. Bhagavat, Supreme Lord, Pada, position, Artha, worth. Atapiyat Pada Nakavi Rashishtam. Jagad Varincho Pahritan Anamba. Shesham Punatjat. Shesham Punatjan Yamato Mukundat. Ko Nama Loke Bhagavat Paparita. Atapi yat pada nakava shishtam. Jagat varincho paharita anamaba. Shesham punatyan yatamo mukundat. Ko nama loke bhagavat padarhatam. Ladies.
Okay.
Anyone else? Thank you. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Who can be worthy of the name of the Supreme Lord but the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna? Ramaji collected the water emanating from the nails of his feet in order to award it to Lord Shiva, who as a worshipful welcome. This very water, the Ganges, is purifying the whole universe, including Lord Shiva. So you want to read the purport? Yeah, you have the mic over there. Okay. No, you can read there.
The conception of many gods in the Vedic literature by the ignorant is completely wrong. The Lord is one without a second, but He expands Himself in many ways, and this is confirmed in the Vedas. Such expansions of the Lord are limitless, but some of them are the living entities. The living entities are not as powerful as the Lord's planetary expansions, and therefore there are two different types of expansions. Lord Brahma is generally one of the living entities, and Lord Shiva is the via medium between the Lord and the living entities. In other words, even demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, who are the chief amongst all demigods, are never equal to or greater than Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, and all powerful demigods like Brahma and Shiva are engaged in the worship of Vishnu or Lord Krishna. Therefore, who can be more powerful than Mukunda, Lord Krishna, to be factually called the Supreme Personality of Godhead?
The goddess of fortune, Lakshmiji, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva are not independently powerful. They are powerful as expansion of the Supreme Lord, and all of them are engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, and so also are the living entities. There are four sects of worshipful devotees of the Lord, and the chief amongst them are the Brahma Sampradaya, Rudra Sampradaya, and Sri Sampradaya, descending directly from Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, respectively. Besides the above-mentioned three sampradayas, there is the Kumara Sampradaya, descending from Sanatan Kumara. All of the four original sampradayas are still scrupulously engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord up to date, and they all declare that Lord Krishna, Mukunda, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and no other personality is equal to Him or greater than Him.
Okay. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuramilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So the topic assigned today by Galakanta in the syllabus for this section of verses from the Bhagavatam was the four Vaishnava Sampradayas. Now, Shreshwar Prabhu, my dear friend who's with us now, he reacted the same way I did when I heard that assignment. The four Vaishnava Sampradayas in 30 minutes? wow, that's quite an assignment, you know, to be able to even approach that subject matter. That's a millennium in length of existence and the breadth of the teachings of those sampradayas. Wow, how could it be approached? But I actually had a very interesting experience in preparing for the class, and I think it was very much in line with the whole idea of sampradaya, and so I want to share that experience I had with you today, and hopefully we can get some glimpse into these four sampradayas through that way. As those of you that are regulars here know, in the last couple of weeks that I've been here, I've been speaking about our Vaishnava worldview. We talked about worldview in terms of, warfare or responsibility of governments. We talked about worldview in terms of other aspects of our modern lives. This is also a worldview class, but when we're looking at the Vaishnava Sampradayas and their teachings, what we're really looking at is the ultimate worldview, the conception of reality. What is reality versus illusion? That's the main teaching of the Sampradayas. So how to approach that subject matter? Well, the whole question of Sampradaya itself, it's not that these are particular schools of thought, you know, that this Sampradaya or this Sampradaya means like a party or a group. This group has this particular school of thought and another Sampradaya has a different school of thought. I think we're mistaken if we go at it in that way, although certainly there are core teachings of these four lines or lineages in the Vaishnava theology. But it's more than that. Sampradaya means how we approach receiving knowledge just as much as it does the actual knowledge that's received. There's a phrase that is used called Avaroha Panta. Avaroha Panta. I want to read you something that Srila Prabhupada wrote about this Avaroha Panta. He says, "This path of acceptance is called Avaroha Panta. The word Avaroha is related to the word avatar, which means that which descends. The materialists want to understand everything by aroha panta, by argument and reason. But transcendental matters cannot be understood in this way. Rather, one must follow the avaroha panta, the process of descending knowledge. Therefore, one must accept the parampara system. And the best parampara system is that which extends from Krishna, evam parampara prapta. What Krishna says, we should accept, imam rajasayo vidu. This is called avaroha panta." So, sampradaya, when we approach this subject of the four Vaishnava sampradayas, we're basically saying that how knowledge descends through these four lines. And of course, what is that knowledge? That knowledge is, as Prabhupada says here at the end of the purport today, that all the four original sampradayas still scrupulously engage in the transcendental service of the Lord up to date, and they all declare that Lord Krishna Mukunda is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Vaishnava sampradayas mean the Avaroha Panta of the Vaishnava Sampradayas means accepting that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead in a descending process and doing what? Can anybody want to venture a guess about how the Sampradayas work? How this knowledge descends? Anybody say? Yes? Disciplic succession, yes, but there's a particular function that goes on in that disciplic succession. That's what I'm looking for, yes. Serving a guru is also there. These are all elements of the thing. Well, but I'm looking for something specific. Passed down by hearing. All the things you're talking about are activated by hearing. By hearing, that's how the sampradaya works. One hears from one's guru, and that's the way knowledge descends. And so, the process of hearing, let's reflect on that a little bit. The process of hearing works on, let's say, three or four principles. First is that, and this was spoken about by a sannyasi, one of our sannyasis, ISKCON sannyasis, who visited here a few months ago, Romapad Swami. he was visiting Alachua, and he gave a talk there, and he was talking about how a guru delivers knowledge to his disciple. And he was making the point that the seat of knowledge, what's the seat of knowledge? The heart. Who said? Yes, the seat of knowledge is the heart. And so how is that heart, that knowledge that's in the heart, passed to someone else, the disciple? It's passed through his words, his speaking. So the seat of knowledge is the heart, and that knowledge is transmitted in a descending way to the disciple through the guru's words. What do we chant? We just got finished chanting. Chite te guru charna padma. Chite te koyakya. Is there something that it says that the words, isn't it? Okay, my only desire is to have my consciousness purified by the words emanating from your lotus mouth. And so the words have potency, but they have potency dependent upon the receptivity of the disciple. The disciple has to be receptive. A person has to be receptive when the guru is revealing his heart. Basically, when the guru is giving instruction, he's revealing his heart, his realizations. They're sitting there in his heart. They're revealed through his words, and they take effect in the heart only if, well, let's say, to the degree which there is receptivity in the heart, that the heart has actually become a little soft, or affection. There's some affection on the disciple's part for his guru, and affection on the part of the guru. If it's coming from the heart, it's got to be mixed with affection. And that's the seed of our affection. So the knowledge is just not dry philosophical knowledge. It's mixed with the heart, the feelings, the merciful feelings of the guru that comes through his words. And for the receptive heart, that heart which is softened by love for and affection for the guru, then the realization takes hold in the heart. Then the realization takes hold. And so then the words of the guru actually shape the heart. They start shaping the heart. This isn't an intellectual process. I hope you get that point, because sampradaya is not an intellectual process, although, as we'll see a little later when we talk about some of these differences among the four Vaishnava sampradayas in philosophy, certainly that aspect is there. But the real principle is a matter of a heart. Therefore, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, what is that verse? Submission and service. Tadvidi panipatena pariprasne eva seveya upayaktantite gyanam gyaninastadvardarshan. That if you want to know the truth, then you have to approach the guru with surrender and service. Surrender, humility, and service. That's a soft heart. And then the teachings can take effect. So that's the avaroha panta. That's the, it shouldn't be put on the ground like this. That's the avaroha panta. That's the descending process. That's sampradaya. So when I had these thoughts about sampradaya and approaching this whole question of the four Vaishnava sampradayas, I thought, well, and I even started preparing the class, and I went to different sources to try to find out what the philosophies are and how they could be presented. And I did a little cut and paste, which, you know, is easy to do in modern computers, cut and paste. And so I found a exposition on the four Vaishnava sampradayas, and it had like a little biography of the main proponent and then the elements of their philosophy. So I thought, well, if I'm going to present these four Vaishnava sampradayas, then let me cut and paste. So I cut out the biographies of these, and I just tried to get the main philosophical points. And I was having a difficult time, you know, juggling, understanding of all these things. But then it struck me. You can't understand these things without the mercy of those acharyas. And what have you done in your preparation? You've cut out any reference to them, any history of them, you know, just threw them aside. And you're going to just concentrate on a philosophy. How is it possible to understand? It's not possible. This is what we get from Sreshwar Prabhu's course on foundational relationship with Srila Prabhupada. How can we understand the philosophies if we don't pay respect to the acharyas who are the head of those sampradayas? That's the way to gain understanding about the philosophical points. And indeed, that's probably more important than trying to understand the differences in these philosophical concepts. Then that's probably more important than trying to just understand them on their own. We won't understand them, but with their mercy, by their mercy, we can understand them. Therefore, what I'd like to do to start is to, well, first of all, I have a handout that I want to give you, and then talk a little bit about who the main acharyas are in the four Vaishnava sampradayas. Hopefully when we get to know them a little bit, then their philosophy will stick in our heart a little bit better. So I have only about 10 or 11 of these little charts. So maybe you can share. You can divide them equally and share. This is a little chart that has the four Vaishnava sampradayas, and it has the Mayavadi school also there, just to, for comparison's sake. It gives the name of the sampradaya, the acharyas, their commentaries, and the tattva, or what the essence of their teachings are. But again, before we get into that, let's talk about the acharyas themselves. Here's another quote from Prabhupada. In the Padma Purana, it has also said, Sampradaya vihina ye mantraste nisphalam mata. There are four Vaishnava sampradayas, or disciplic successions, namely the Brahma sampradaya, Rudra sampradaya, the Sri sampradaya, and the Kumara sampradaya. If one wants to advance in spiritual power, one must receive his mantra from one of those bona fide sampradayas, otherwise he will never successfully advance in spiritual life. So the Brahma Sampradaya. Now the acharya of the Brahma Sampradaya is Madhvacharya. So we'll just read a little bit about Madhvacharya. And we'll start with Madhvacharya because this is the Sampradaya that we find ourselves in. The Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. That is the Sampradaya that Srila Prabhupada has mercifully connected us with. So, who is Madhvacharya? Sri Madhvacharya appeared in 1238 AD near Udupi, Karnataka, in South India. He was considered an incarnation of Vayu, the wind god. One thing we know from hearing about Madhvacharya is that he was very strongly built. And there are many different stories about him with his strength. One time, his father had a debt, and he got some tamarind seeds. He was a small boy. He got some tamarind seeds, and by the power of squeezing those tamarind seeds in his hand, they became gold coins, and he was able to pay off his father's debt. Whenever his mother wanted him, even if he was at a distant place, he could come there in one jump. He was, as it says here, he was an incarnation of Vayu, the wind god, and so he had that power, and he was able to exert it. I think he also met some bandits at one point, and they were trying to rob him. And he said, well, I'll give you everything I have if you can lift my toe off of the ground. And they tried, and they couldn't even lift his toe off the ground, so very strong physically. Here's a story here. Once a fierce Bengal tiger attacked Madhvacharya's disciple, Satyatirtha. Madhvacharya wrestled the tiger and sent him away with his tail between his legs. In Udupi in South India, you can still go there now. I visited there. And has anybody been to Udupi? You lived in Udupi, yes. Right, okay, in Udupi. So that's the place, that's the seat of Madhvacharya there. And there's a deity there, Sri Krishna deity, who's a cowherd boy holding a stick in his hand that's still worshipped today by his disciples there in Udupi. Wonderful place. So Madhvacharya, after Shankaracharya, who had previously toured India spreading impersonalism, Madhvacharya also traveled the length and breadth of India preaching personal theism and devotion to Lord Vishnu. He defeated innumerable Jains, Buddhists, Mayavadis, atheists, logicians, and agnostics. The Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya originates with the Madhvas. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers thoroughly studied Madhva's works before compiling their philosophy. Jiva Goswami, who is a great philosopher among the six Goswamis, heavily drew from Madhvacharya's writings in his own writings. So that's a little bit about Madhvacharya. Again, he's the head of the Brahma Sampradaya, Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya that we appear in Madhvacharya. So let's go next to Ramanujacharya, who's the head of the Sri Sampradaya. Sri Vaishnavas are known very visibly. Can anybody say how Sri Vaishnavas visibly appear different than us when we see them? Yes. Yes, they have. Yes, they have thick, very thick, white lines of tilak, shaped similarly like ours, and they have a red line in the middle. They are predominant in South India. And Sri Ramanujacharya is their head of their sampradaya. So let's read a little bit about him. Now, we heard that Madhvacharya appeared when? The 1200s something, right? So Sri Ramanujacharya appeared in 1017 AD near Madras, South India, in a family of Vedic scholars. Sri Vaishnavas say he was an incarnation of Lakshman. The word Ramanuja means follower of Ram. He received his name because Lakshman always follows and serves his brother, Lord Ramachandra. A boy of amazing wit, Ramanuja quickly learned Sanskrit, logic, and the Vedas. He took Diksha and married at age 16. Now, Madhvacharya took sannyas. He never married. I think he took sannyas when he was like 12 or 8 years old or something like that. Such a powerful, renounced person in the world. Ramanujacharya, on the other hand, he married at age 16. Let's see here. There's a lot on his life. They're centered, Ramanuja Sampradaya is centered in Srirangam in South India. The largest temple in the world is there in Srirangam. It's got like 14 boundary walls or something like that. There's very large gopurams or gates to the temple. And they worship in that temple a reclining Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu in his form, he's reclining. It's quite amazing. We don't see deities like that so often, so my wife and I traveled there to South India, and we had darshan of Ranganath declining Lord Vishnu. It's quite an amazing scene to see deity like that. When Radhanath Swami recently, a few years ago, traveled there to Rangakshetra, very well received by the current leaders of that sampradaya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also visited and stayed for some time during the rainy season during his travels in Rangakshetra. So, Ramanujacharya. The next we will look at is Nimbarka. Nimbarka is the acharya of the Kumara Sampradaya. And let's see. Accurate biographies are difficult to find, yet authorities agree that Sri Nimbarka Acharya preached Krishna consciousness about 300 years before the advent of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That would be like in the 1100s or something like that. In the Nabhidhudam Mahatmya, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that Nimbarka had previously worshipped Lord Shiva in Bilva, Rudradweep. Lord Shiva appeared before Nimbarka, instructing him to take initiation from the four Kumaras who were meditating nearby. Nimbarka received Radha Krishna mantra and continued living in Navadweep, following the teachings of Sanat Kumar Samhita. He worshipped Radha and Krishna with great love. Soon Radha and Krishna appeared before Nimbarka. Then the divine couple displayed their unified form of Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Lord Gauranga said, "Nimbarka, in the future, when I preach my Sankirtan movement, I will personally teach the perfect transcendental philosophy of Achinta Beda Beda Tattva. I will take the essence of the philosophies of Madhva, Ramanuja, Vishnu Swami. From you, Nimbarka, I will take two important principles. One, the necessity of taking shelter of Srimati Radharani, and two, the high esteem of the Rajagopis' love for Sri Krishna." So there are a lot of similarities between Nimbarka's philosophy and our philosophy, which we'll discuss in a minute. If you go to Vrindavan today, there's a temple called the Sriji Mandir, which is near Loy Bazaar, which is a place most devotees know, Loy Bazaar. But near there, there's a temple, the Sriji Mandir, and that's the center of the current center of the Nimbarka Sampradaya there in Vrindavan. So they're centered in Vrindavan. And so finally, there is the Rudra Sampradaya, coming from Lord Shiva, Shiva Sampradaya, and Vishnu Swami is the head of that sampradaya. Now, this is an interesting sampradaya. It's the oldest of all the sampradayas. And there are actually three Vishnu Swamis. Vishnu Swami is the founder of the Rudra Sampradaya, which is the oldest of the four recognized sampradayas. It is said that Vishnu Swami was born in the Dravida country, South India, after the completion of the sacrifice of Janamejaya around the beginning of Kali Yuga. So that you can see that this is much older sampradaya. Beginning of Kali Yuga, he preached this. And it gives a history here of the three Vishnu Swamis. Let me just read about the last of them. Vyasa Sarva was the last in a line of sannyasis, after whom the line became almost extinct, until it was revived by Raj Gopal, who also assumed the name Vishnu Swami in the beginning of the 9th century. His main follower was Bilva Mangal. So you know Bilva Mangal Thakur. He's the blind sage that's chanting bhajans. You're familiar with the name Bilva Mangal. So he was the main follower of Vishnu Swami. Rajagopal Vishnu Swami revived the old Vishnu Swami line and began to actively propagate with renewed vigor and enthusiasm. He installed the Varada Raj temple in Kanchi, Ranchur Lal in Dwarka, and many other deities in different places of pilgrimage. So if you go to South India, Kanchipuram, there's a temple there. I also had a chance to visit that place, Varaha Raja Temple. Vishnu deity there, very beautiful Vishnu deity. And in Ranchur Lal in Dwarka. Dwarka is in Gujarat, another beautiful temple there that was established by Vishnu Swami. The Vishnu Swami line has not only these very ancient acharyas, but a more recent acharya, Vallabhacharya, who we know of from the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's the acharya of the Pushti Marg section of the Shiva Sampradaya, the Rudra Sampradaya. And Pushti Marg basically means that devotion, a devotional line. You can achieve perfection through devotion to Krishna. So Vishnu Swami and Vallabhacharya are the principles there. Now, if you look at the little chart that I gave you, it describes this. Their names are there as the acharyas of these lines. Any questions on any of those? Yes.
How is it that these different like sampradayas just like formed? Like, what did Madhavacharya do? Like, he's just like, oh, I'm just gonna continue on. Like, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me. Like, why is he under the Brahma sampradaya? Like, how did that happen? Like,
okay. Right. Well, how did that happen? Well, if your question is going to sort of the differences in the philosophies, why are there differences in them?
No, more like how do they become the heads of these sampradayas? You know, like Madhavacharya is like, okay, so I'm going to be the head of the Brahma sampradaya from now on. You know, like how do they, like where does this knowledge come from, and how do they take up that position? I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, they receive it in the cyclic succession themselves, not that they're also devoid of being part of a system of Avaroha Panta hearing like that, but they establish themselves as the head of the Sampradaya by their preaching, by their writings, by their commentaries. Like it mentions here on the chart, commentaries on Vedanta. And each of the Sampradayas has a commentary in Vedanta. So you'll find generally that the head of the Sampradaya has written a commentary, who has propagated a particular vision that establishes the Sampradaya. In other words, there was one point in time with the Argodia Vaishnava Sampradaya, for instance, that it was being challenged as not being bona fide. You know, again, somebody saying, well, who are you? You just can't say you're a Sampradaya. And what those that were challenging wanted was, where's your commentary on Vedanta? If you're a bona fide Sampradaya, where's your commentary on Vedanta? And so that commentary, which is called Sri Govinda Bhashya, was written by Baladev Bijibhusan, who Prabhupada dedicates the Bhagavad Gita to. And so acharyas, main acharyas in any sampradaya, establish themselves by their preaching, by their development of a cohesive philosophical viewpoint. And each of the four Vaishnava sampradayas, as Prabhupada says, they all accept Krishna or Vishnu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are slight differences in their understanding of coming from that, understanding flowing from that. And so that's kind of what I can just mention briefly here to give you some idea of the differences, why there are four Vaishnava Sampradayas.
I just got back from Philadelphia where Rabindra told me the story of how Prabhupada became founder of Charya. You know that story?
Well, you can have, well, that's very relevant to us. Somebody have the microphone? We can give it.
Well, I thought they might like to hear that.
No, please.
Okay, well, I was just... Rabindra researched the issue of why do we call Prabhupada founder Acharya? What's that title mean? Where does it come from? Because we don't really find it any place except one place. And that is a fascinating story, which I'll tell another time. Okay. So what happened is there was a book published, and I don't recall the name of it. Yeah, you know the story well?
Yeah, because it's part of my seminar.
Oh, well, you tell it. You know, I just heard it secondhand, so
well, you tell the story. But before we get into that, I just want to get back to Manaji's question, because what you said, Shesha, was all true, but her question still remains. What connects Madhva to Brahma? You know, and I don't have the answer to that, but I do know in Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Is this working?
Yes.
In Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Professor N.K. Sanyal, Nishikant Sanyal, who was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's very literary disciple, they were co-editors. The Thakur and Sanyal were co-editors of the Harmonist magazine, which was the Gaudiya Mission, the Gaudiya Math's publication. And after his disciple Sanyal wrote this, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Saraswati Thakur sat down for 2 months and edited the whole thing. And in both The Harmonist and this book, Sanyal identifies, and presumably Saraswati Thakur does too, they identify the origins of the sampradayas, Brahma, Shiva, Kumaras, and Lakshmi, with these founder acharyas. In the Kali Yuga, we have this concept of four people connected with the original, the origin, the originators of the sampradayas. Sanyal calls them the prehistoric teachers. Everybody to tell you that? The prehistoric teachers or preceptors. So anyway, for example, in the Sri Sampradaya, the Shri, if you go to Sri Rangam, the Shris will tell you that Lakshmi has especially empowered Ramanuja to preach this Vishishta Dvaita doctrine, you know, the qualitative oneness of us with God, but the quantitative difference. And if you go to Udupi, where I lived in and around for a couple of years, Madhva is preaching very vigorously, the Madhvites, they're preaching very vigorously this Shuddha Dvaita, you know, clear distinction. It's a real crusade against Mayavad, the clear distinction between Jiva and Ishwar. So these founder acharyas, these four founder acharyas, Ramanuja, Madhva, Vishnuswami, Nimbarka, they are very vigorously, you know, carrying on the lines in unique ways. And in Madhva's case, he actually took that sampradaya in this crusader direction, you know, this real crusade against Mayavad. According to our godbrother Gaurakeshava Prabhu, it's not that Ramanuja had a new philosophy. He inherited that from the line. But they say, the Shris say, the Lakshmis say, that Ramanuja was specifically empowered to preach it super powerful. And if you go to Sri Rangam, I mean, they're powerful preachers, these people. And they like us because we're also, you know, evangelical. We're reaching out. We're preaching against impersonalism like that. But I just like to say one thing is that I like Shesha's mood about how, and it's true, it's all the sampradayas, it's not different ideologies in the broadest sense. We all have the same, you know, zeitgeist. We're Krishna, Stu, Bhagavan, Swayam, or at least Vishnu. We're all monotheists. And Prabhupada compared it in one lecture to different political parties, the sampradayas. And they, you know, they wrangle, they might have their differences, but at the end of the day, they're all citizens of the same country. We all accept that God is a person. We might have different angles of vision on that person, but the unity is, should be stressed like that. But if you want to hear more about Sampradayas, come to the seminar.
The founder of Acharya, what happened is this term appeared, the book was Krishna Chaitanya. Yeah. And this book was published in English. And correct me on this, because I just heard the story 2 days ago from Bindra, so 2 days, maybe I can remember something. But the book was a manual for the devotees going to the West. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, in the 20s, a harmonist, other books, he started shifting to English because he realized the next phase, the next thing to do is take this sacred knowledge and bring it to the West. The West had come to India by then, especially in terms of the English. So that was the next step. So he started preparing. First, built his famous temple in Calcutta to be the headquarters, because Calcutta at that time wasn't just a city, it was a capital it was the eastern capital of the British Empire. And the British Empire was the leading empire of the world. You know, the sun never set on the British Empire. Now it never rises, but that's a different matter. Pretty foggy in London. So, and then the root was where? Chaitanya Math, Mayapur, the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. That was the root. The capital was Calcutta, and the mission was to go to the West and preach to whom? The intelligentsia. And they prepared this book, and in this book it declares what the founder Acharya is, but it doesn't identify Bhaktisiddhanta as that. And that's the interesting thing. It talks about what a founder Acharya means. Am I getting this right?
Well, in the harmonist, either Saraswati Thakur or Sanyal or both of them identify Srila Saraswati Thakur as sometimes the president Acharya,
and
sometimes the founder Acharya. That's in there too. Because Saraswati Thakur was the first one to take that Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya in a dynamic direction outside Bharatvarsh to start to fulfill the prediction, Priti Vitayachi Eta Nagarati Gram, that in every town and village, it says in Chaitanya Bhagavat, my holy name will be sung. So that was vigor, that was started by Saraswati Thakur, and we'd still be under that founder Acharya if the mission hadn't dissolved. And then Prabhu can pick it up from there, because Prabhupada had to make the very momentous decision to do what?
Well, himself founded. And what he did, though, is Prabhupada then went to the West. And now Bhaktisiddhanta, generally, the title he might put was President Acharya, not Founder Acharya on his stationery, though the term was referred to and it was applied. But as Rabindra explained, Bhaktisiddhanta would not take that title until he accomplished his mission, which was what? Do something unique and special. Unless you're not a Founder Acharya, just go to the West. And so and he sent disciples to the West, and they came back sort of like that tiger with the tail between their legs. So they were on the wrong end of that wrestling match. So then Prabhupada came to the West not knowing what would happen. You know, his diary says, I got off the boat. I didn't know if I should turn left or right. He didn't know, but he knew he should do it. And then it took off. And it took off way beyond, I think, what Prabhupada imagined, though he did tell the subway conductor at one time, you know the story. Mr. Rubin, Prabhupada was sitting on a bench, obviously a poor man. And he said to the subway conductor, what do you do? I have temples all over, and I have books in all hundreds of languages, and farm community, blah, 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 going on and on like this. And the man said, but Prabhupada, but sir, you seem very poor. He says, yes, it is separated from me by time. So Prabhupada had some vision, but it hadn't manifested. And then he thought he would go preach to the intelligent class, but instead he found us. And then it started spreading and spreading. At that point, he had fulfilled what his guru wanted, which was what? To take Krishna consciousness in a big way to the West.
that time, he had sort of no choice to, if he's following the parampara, to declare himself as the founder of Sharia. So among his godbrothers, that was least, I could say, is controversial. But it's an accurate description. And kind of to me, it was a very inspiring story to hear.
Okay, well, I have a question to follow on this. And my question is that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he established the temple, his main temple in Mayapur, has the four sampradayas around his main worshipful deity, Sri Radhika Giri Gandharvikahari. Anyway, Gandharvika Girihari. So does it mean that following that Srila Prabhupada coming and establishing himself as the founder of Acharya, does it mean that all the Vaishnava sampradayas are now can be considered united behind Prabhupada, and so that the four Vaishnava sampradayas come together?
I defer that.
According to Ravindra, he did his research in Sanyal's book. When Saraswati Thakur formed the Gaudiya Mission, the Gaudiya Math, that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his preaching, incorporated the essential elements of the other Vaishnava sampradayas into his preaching.
Right.
So Mahaprabhu was the synthesis between Mayavad, thesis, Mayavad, it's all one. Vaishnava sampradaya, Madhva, Ramanuja, there's difference. So Mahaprabhu, oneness and difference. So Mahaprabhu incorporated the essential elements of those other sampradayas in his Achintya Veda Veda Tattva preaching. And that is enshrined in the Sri Chaitanya Math.
Okay, yes. I think that that's a good question, and from hearing what they're describing here, I would say that it seems like they sort of synthesized a certain teaching, and the line started from there. And so the differences come from the realizations of these heads of the sampradayas and their teachings from there. Well, the Vedic knowledge was there, and I think that that's a conceptual way to approach it, yeah.
Actually, I remember reading Madhavacharya meeting Ved Vyas in Badrikashram. So Madhavacharya traveled to Badrikashram. He went there to show his version of Bhagavad Gita and got instructions from him. So he accepted him as a spiritual master. And that's why, like, from Brahma to Narada to Madhava. So that's Brahma Sampradaya.
Okay.
Sorry, Brahma Sampradaya.
So that's an answer to Stephanie's question. Did you hear what he said? Maybe he can get to you, because that gives a direct answer. He says that Madhvacharya, he went to Badrikashram and he met Srila Vyasadeva there. And he heard from Srila Vyasadeva, and Vyasadeva sort of authorized him. And so that's a connection from Brahma, to Brahma, another connection above him to Brahma. Like that. Okay. Okay. Hare Krishna.